If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals, and we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Hallelujah. 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 For the Lord God omnipotent reigneth. Hallelujah. 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 For the Lord God omnipotent reigneth.
And welcome to today's Eurobytes episode. Todd and I today are going to do a recap on the recent elections that we had in the German states of Thuringia and Saxony. Todd, we witnessed an absolute political earthquake in Germany that to this day, post-war Germany has not seen so far. The AfD, the Alternative for Germany, Alternative für Deutschland, won its first election in Thuringia. They came in first with a whopping 32.8%. That is by far, they are in the number one position. The Christian Democrats came in second at 23%. And the newly found BSW party, which is sort of like a left-wing, right-wing mixture, Bündnis Sahra Wagenknecht came in at 15%. Mm-hmm. That was the first election that the AfD has now won. Thuringia has always been the epicenter of the AfD ever since their charismatic leader Björn Höcke took over, and he's basically been in the bullseye of the media and the press, calling him a right wing fascist Nazi, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And that narrative seems to be sticking, Fabian.
That narrative does seem to be sticking because people are definitely afraid to go into a coalition with him. Hmm. I think one of the biggest questions that we're going to face here is he going to pull through and actually become prime minister of that state? Mm-hmm. With the coalition help of another party, or is he going to do what a lot of other right-wing European parties have done, and that is to step back, go the Geert Wilders strategy, that you're not going to go for the prime minister office, but you're going to work from the background, and you're going to let your party be in charge, but you're not at the helm. Mm-hmm. So that's the question that is going to get raised. But the thing is, the AfD won. And initially, this is an absolute political earthquake. Mm-hmm. I have to mention the other state of Saxony, because that was a head-to-head race. The Christian Democrats barely inched ahead by 31%, and the AfD is at 30%. Mm. Saxony is one of Germany's most beautiful states. Dresden, the capital, beautiful, beautiful historic place, but Saxony itself has been sort of a place where the AfD, along with Thuringia, has received an incredible amount of votes, and where the Pegida movement started, where a lot of the so-called right-wing resistance has started. But, I mean, these are the states that are very, very anti-immigration, anti-green policy. I mean, the Greens, they didn't even get into the parliament in Thuringia. In Saxony, they barely got in, but that's most likely because of all the college students from the West. It would be like Californians moving to Texas. Well, here it is too, you know, and then they start voting for the Green Party. Mm-hmm. Same deal in Saxony. But we're witnessing the establishment of the Alternative for Germany as a political force. And this is making headlines. No matter what will happen, this sent a big signal towards the government in Berlin. Mm-hmm. But it also made international headlines.
Yeah.
I think the key takeaway, what we're going to witness, and what, in my opinion, is going to be essential is the following. The party that I mentioned, the BSW, Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht. Sarah Wagenknecht, she's a former member of the Germany party Die Linke, the left. Mm-hmm. And she left this party because she is, how do I put this? She's an anti-woke, anti-establishment, anti-globalist, anti-elitist, national populist leftist. And she has hinted that she could go into a coalition with the AfD.
What percentage of the vote do they have? Approximately?
How much? Pardon?
What percentage of the vote does she have?
15%.
So that would be 40 to 50% of the vote.
Yes. That, yeah. I mean, they could form a coalition and govern. Mm-hmm. That would be huge because the fact is that what we would witness here is the nationalist populist left and the national populist right going together. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be a trajectory that, in my opinion, has already started now in the U.S. with Trump and Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And in France, we're seeing the nationalist populist left, the national populist right gaining ground, and we're seeing the center parties being mauled in the middle.
Yeah, the left is really pissed off at Macron in France.
That's correct. Yeah. Exactly. So I think the question is going to be, is the left going to return to what they used to stand for, or are they going to continue in their you know, what we're witnessing in every Western country with all of this wokeism?
Globalist destruction, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, I think if they were to go into a coalition, it would possibly foment a future political movement that will probably dominate the West for years to come, because mm-hmm. the workers, anybody in the working class feels betrayed, obviously. Mm-hmm. They feel betrayed by, especially in Germany, the mm-hmm. horrendous energy policy. The fact that, you know, Germany got rid of coal, got rid of nuclear, and has incredibly high energy prices. The industry is fleeing the country in droves. Mm-hmm. Volkswagen
destroyed the manufacturing, destroyed the jobs, right?
That's right. I mean, mm-hmm. Volkswagen is in dire straits. Volkswagen, mm-hmm. in its entire company history, has always been in expansion. Well, now they're in decline. And mm-hmm. there's actually talk of them closing plants here in Germany. Mm-hmm. And the government is now stepping in, similar to what Obama did back with General Motors, trying to, you know,
right,
save the company. But we all know that when the government steps in to save a company, it might not be the best economic decision. The thing is, these companies are fleeing Germany. Porsche is fleeing Germany. They're building a big plant in the United States now. Mm-hmm. Why? Because energy costs are so low. Mm-hmm. But in Germany, they're high. But out of two reasons, ideology and war with Russia.
Yeah.
And the AfD has clearly sent the signal that it does not want to continue the war with Russia.
How does the AfD stop or interrupt this narrative that they're Nazis? I heard it yesterday, you know, from somebody who's moving into Germany and they're afraid of the AfD, you know?
Well, I think, the thing with the Nazi term is what seems to really upset me about that is that the real historic Nazis were absolute monsters and criminals.
Yeah.
And, you know, what they did was so horrendous that humanity lost many lives.
Kind of like launching a bioweapon a few years ago, kind of like that.
Right. I mean,
millions
of people. And the thing is, you know, when people start being called or labeled as a Nazi for being against immigration, that whole term has become so, how should I put it? I mean, it's making it completely, they're making absolute fools of themselves.
Now, I agree.
I think the problem with the IFD is that you obviously have people in the party that used to be in the that used to be in right wing or skinhead movements, in some parts you have these guys. You also have a certain party rhetoric that some people say reminds them of the National Socialist's way to talk. Germans are very particular about language. We have a
kind of like Antifa on the left.
On the left, and
yeah,
right. And so the thing is that Germany out of its history is just afraid to repeat its history. Mm-hmm. I think the problem with the IFD is that they represent a threat to the establishment because they don't comply with the whole, you know, US, UK, Atlanticist, NATO establishment and the way they think how this world should be governed. And I think the other thing is that many people are afraid of a sovereign Germany. Yeah. Many people are afraid of a Germany that might be friendly with Russia. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, with the way that Germany is behaving right now on the federal level and the way that the government has been behaving so incredibly loyal to Kamala and Biden, the question I continue to ask is, what will happen if Trump were to win? Yeah. I mean, because I personally believe that Trump is going to shift the Russia narrative. I think he's going to shift the strategy with Russia. So then people from the IFD are going to be more or less in the driver's seat, but the media has been fighting them. And to get rid of a Nazi image that the media has created is going to be incredibly difficult.
So I told the person who said this, you know, it's okay if you're allowed to say, I don't want to be attacked with machetes and my women raped. That's okay. You can say that, you know, because that's happening in Germany over and over and over again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we've had terror attacks. ISIS is back. I mean, mm-hmm. when Trump was in office, ISIS got destroyed. Mm-hmm. Look who's back, ISIS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there, the irony is that in Solingen, where the knife attack happened, which ISIS claimed was some kind of a festival for diversity, celebrating diversity, and obviously that's where it happened. And obviously this event spiked any IFD polls, and the IFD, which the media has been attacking and attacking and attacking and trying to destroy and continually move people through media mind warfare on the streets against the IFD, it seems to not work in the end, because the election results are showing that that most people are not buying it.
Are they going to ban the party? Sorry to interrupt. Or try to?
They've been trying to. I think constitutionally it's incredibly hard to do that, but they're going to try everything possible to prevent the IFD from gaining any form of power. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, too, that Germany, in essence, will be one of the very few European countries where a right-wing nationalist populist party will not be able to govern whatever way possible. In Austria, the FPÖ was in government. In Sweden, the Sweden Democrats are governing from behind, as I said, with the Netherlands. In Italy with Giorgia Meloni, in most mm-hmm. European countries, right-wing populism has reached the ranks of power, and establishment parties have sort of tied them in. In Germany, they're going to fight to the bitter end to prevent that from happening. Mm-hmm. But that's, in my opinion, out of historic guilt. The problem with that is it's going to enrage the population. It's going to only make the AfD stronger in the long run.
Wow. Well, what else? Immigration. There was some news on that recently. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, my thoughts on that are we're witnessing an absolute shift in the German government's stance on immigration. This current coalition of Social Democrats, Liberals, and Greens has been so open borders, it's been a nightmare. 2015 is a joke compared to what's happening right now. You have a huge influx of illegal immigration coming into Germany, and migration has not been in control. The state has not clamped down on integration. Now, all of a sudden, the Olaf Scholz government has said, we're going to change that and we're going to go to some kind of a zero tolerance
policy. I'm David Cross, and you may know me for my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
With including deportations and closing down the borders, basically ending some form of the Schengen system. Now, just for the viewers to understand Schengen, what is Schengen? Schengen is, to compare to the U.S., it would be like if you went from Michigan to Indiana and you all of a sudden had to cross the border and there'd be police guards who cross your border. It's the policy that the states within the European Union have no more border control. Well, we're witnessing a return of that. And that might, well, I don't know what you think of that, but I think that could be a possible end of the European Union as we know it.
That would be a good thing.
And it would be a self-destructive thing because they would do it themselves, right? They yeah. who always try to preserve it will in the end initially ruin it. I think the thing is that this is completely political. They're doing this. This has been when Olaf Scholz was mayor of Hamburg, he would do very leftist policies early on. He would do the unpopular things in the early years. And then heading up to the election, he would completely shift policy and go in the direction where he knew he would receive the most votes. And the tide is turning in Germany, and Germany has become, immigration has become so unpopular. Migration is an issue that really drives the people more and more towards the AfD and their stance on immigration, basically saying zero, mm-hmm. zero-sum policies that people are fed up. They want deportations. They want illegals. They want those that should be deported to be deported. And even the Christian Democrats, remember, this was Merkel's party. She inherited a party that had always been very harsh on immigration. And then she turned into basically a green, or she did the whole Biden deal, opening mm-hmm. up the borders and letting in millions and millions of people uncontrolled into Germany's mm-hmm. Domestic space. And this hurt, obviously, the CDU, and they've slowly but surely tried to regain ground by saying we're going to go completely full on anti-immigration. But the big question that most voters are asking is, well, what's going to happen after the election? And mm-hmm. so this policy and what we're witnessing, in my opinion, is a political game. Yeah. It's a big political game, and it's not going to it's not going to stand long. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Todd, I wanted to ask you, and then Richard Grenell, he sent out a tweet yesterday. Richard Grenell, remember, he was Germany's, he was ambassador to Germany. I met him back in 2019, and he wrote, and I'm going to quote him. He wrote the following on, I think on Twitter, the blatant election interference from the German government is worse than the Russian and Iranian interference. We see this clearly and we will react accordingly. The following happened. The German Foreign Office yesterday tweeted out the following state, quote, like it or not, Germany's energy system is fully operational with more than 50% renewables, and we are shutting down, not building coal and nuclear plants. Coal will be off the grid by 2038 at the latest. P.S. We also don't eat cats and dogs. Hashtag debate 2024. So what we're witnessing is the German Foreign Office giving its clear opinion on the U.S. presidential debate. And yeah. Grenell nailed him on it, saying this is clear election interference. What's your thought about that?
Well, I think there's no doubt that the EU is a tyrannical organization, and the governments that are governing in the EU have a globalist agenda, which matches completely with the Biden regime, and that they are supporting whatever that regime supports. So, yes, they are involved in the election, I'm sure, because at the end of the day, what I think is you have a transnational, and this is coming out big time in the U.S., where you have bribery going down from the county level all the way up to the congressional level to basically launder money and control the population in the U.S. It's a huge problem. I think this is part of a transnational criminal organization that the EU leadership is very involved in. And I see the governments over there, Macron, you know, what's going on in the UK, all part of this Biden or whoever it is leading this, for lack of a better word, cabal to control humanity. And so I see that as part of more of a symptom than anything. And I think this election in November is crucial. If call it an election, change of power or a chance to change power, whatever that looks like is going to be, however it ends up, is going to be a turning point for the human race, in my opinion. So that's what I think. And that's how that comment you just made fits into that.
Well, I think the question that always comes up in my mind is that, number one, diplomacy used to be very much in the term diplomatic, that a foreign office uses its wording and communication incredibly careful. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is childish to write things like, P.S., we don't eat cats and dogs, and to get involved in the domestic affairs of another country.
That see, they're not, I mean, I sorry to interrupt, but we saw this, you know, when Trump left the White House, you know, they came in and, or not when Trump left, but when he came in, you know, they ripped off, you know, phones out of the walls. They did, you see this at TSA now talking about cutesy stuff like, you know, comments on social media that are childish and absurd and not professional. I think whoever is, you see the mafia movies where they'll go into the stores and just say, hey, this family looks like they want some groceries, come get a bunch of free stuff, and they force the grocery store with the power, you know, with the gun to give away money or, you know, do stuff like that. I think that's what's going on. You just have a criminal class in control and they're not professionals. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you see it everywhere. That's a huge, perfect symptom of it, in my opinion.
Right. Right. I mean, it's a very infantile way to communicate. And it's unfortunate that we've come this far. But I always have to think about one of my favorite movies. I mean, Idiocracy. Right. I mean, we're witnessing Idiocracy. This is a level of idiocracy. And it's incredibly unprofessional. I mean, you think about the military, you know, as an officer. I always know that you are not allowed to interfere or to speak about the politics of another nation when you're in service. Mm-hmm. That is a wrongful duty. You shouldn't do that. And so for a a Department of State or a foreign office to release a tweet like that on the election of another country, in my opinion, is scandalous. And I think Grinnell, he obviously, look, Grinnell knows all of these people. I mean, he was very, very involved when he was in Berlin. He knows them all, and he's calling them out. And I think if Trump were to win, he will likely be Secretary of State. And then who will last then, right? I mean, yeah. and I think that it's very tactically stupid for Germany to position themselves so clearly in favor of Kamala. Or sorry, not Germany, the German government. We always have to make that differentiation.
Yeah, sure, sure.
The German government to make this position, because once Trump were to win, it'll be, in my opinion, it's only going to make them look worse.
It's like Hunger Games when you remember the scenes of the clowns up there, you know, laughing while, you know, people are dying. I mean, you know, that's kind of the same concept, right? Because once you're a criminal and you're in power and you have unlimited power. Now, I watched there's a movie with called Sodder, which is about, you know, Ivan the Terrible. And then the wife is so crazed because she has so much power, and she's laughing and throwing coins to people, as you know, and just making fun of the peasants. And that's the same kind of, once you get that total power, you're no longer a professional human being, in my opinion.
Right. And one thing that is so upsetting is that, you know, I watched Newt Gingrich made a movie on Pope John Paul II, and Pope John Paul II was a fervent anti-communist, and he was in a quote-unquote alliance with President Reagan against the Soviets, against the communists, against communist infiltration within the church in Latin America, and the U.S., the West, and the church had a clear stance on Marxism, had a clear stance on, you know, to talk in war game mode, who the red team is and who the blue team is.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that the upsetting thing in today's world is that, you know, you look towards America and you can't really say these guys are the blue team. You know what I mean? And if you look towards the church, you can't really say, well, they're the good guys. You can't, if you look at the West, if you look at Western Europe, if you look at what's happening in Great Britain, I mean, you know, we're witnessing the destruction of free speech. We're witnessing so many things that made up the West, and it's a very disturbing thing to watch. Now, should we be pessimistic? No, but it's going to obviously be a fight. And for you know, for the U.S. election at the moment, I couldn't make a prediction. I don't know about you, but
well, if it was a free and fair election, Trump would win by a landslide. But it's not going to be a free and fair election, so I have no idea what they haven't planned. You know, we're pressing hard on some vectors of election fraud that we know about, that we're exposing, that we're getting to prosecutors. Ken Paxton is very busy, so I don't know what's going to happen. But I do believe that humanity around the world has to rise up against this tyrannical. The tyrannical regimes in every country, including here, including, you know, I think all over the EU as well.
Well, and in Europe, the problem is that we're going to be in the forefront of all of this, because remember, when Biden won, you and I talked about the fact that war in Ukraine will come. This was early 2021. We talked about this, and it came. And the problem is, you know, Great Britain just yesterday openly stated that the Ukraine should shoot rockets into Russia.
So did Biden. Yeah.
So did Biden.
This is one of the vectors of stopping the election that they can do is create World War III, essentially. So that's
in the German electorate, the war in Ukraine is becoming more and more unpopular.
I saw that.
And what did Olaf Scholz do? What is he doing to try to gain votes? Oh, let's do peace talks. Let's invite Russia in for peace talks. Now, Colonel McGregor has said this oftentimes. He said the only actor to really get Russia on the table and perhaps move forward with peace talks would be Berlin. And that's true. In a historic sense, it's very much true that Berlin has the Trump card to conduct talks with Russia. And as much as, you know, I criticized Merkel, I have to at least give her this. When she was in power, she could broker deals with Putin. Mm-hmm. We both know that Putin is a thug. We know that Putin is not our friend, but we also know that he's a realist and you can do deals with him.
Right, sure.
And I think that in the long run, this will be Germany's key role to establish some kind of agreement with Russia, because if Trump comes in, he's going to demand it, because he's not going to let the Europeans. I mean, if the Europeans want to continue this war, they can, but Trump's not going to finance it anymore.
I think you're spot on.
And that is what a lot of the Atlantic establishment is fearing.
Of course. You had Victoria Nuland come out this week saying, yeah, we told Ukraine not to make peace with Russia. I mean, it's fascinating, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and this is where, this is in the end, to draw the circle back to the AfD, this is where they are presenting themselves to the voters, are saying, mm-hmm. our role in this question is to position ourselves towards peace and cooperation with Russia.
I mean, essentially, they want a good life for their constituents, for the working class. That's what it is at the end of the day, right? They don't want to be conscripted for foreign wars where they'll die, and there are stupid wars. They want good economic policy. They want cheap energy. They want safety. I mean, they want food. You know, it's not like they're trying to take over the world. They just want the people to be okay. And the same in the U.S.
I think the thing is, too, is that, you know, looking at history and looking at the geostrategic position of Europe, mm-hmm. The fact that Europe has very limited natural resources, it needs a partner, or at least a business partner to trade with to get its natural resources. Mm-hmm. The cheapest and easiest way, obviously, is Russia. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is that the LNG industry in the United States has been demanding that it wants to export its LNG to Europe. It wants to become Europe's number one, or Europe should be the number one customer for the LNG industry in the United States. But from an economic strategic standpoint, Russia is the clear producer for cheap European energy. So I think that the AfD is put, as you said, it's looking for, I mean, it's basically, to sum up what you said, their policy is just Germany first. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Germany's workers first, Germany's industry first, Germany's production manufacturing first. That is their stance. And that obviously does not fit into the narratives of what we're witnessing within the European Union and within the essentially within the West.
It's very dark. Look at what happened with Australia. They're going to, you know, shut down X. I mean, you know, Rumble. It is
Brazil.
Dark.
It's Brazil. Yeah, right? Brazil banned X, and this mm-hmm. comes from Lula. I mean, you have to remember, in Brazil, Lula is a Marxist. Right.
Completely. I mean, he's a figurehead. I mean, it's it's dark, and it's coming to the EU. The EU is already talking. They're going to try, you know.
Well, the EU did before the first, I think this was the Elon Trump interview. They tried to ban that interview mm-hmm. from being published in the EU. Look, these are all things that are these are developments where you would say, after the Cold War ended, you know, you thought that Marxism was defeated. You would think, right? But it has returned, and the problem is that it's returned from a corporate standpoint. I mean, we're witnessing corporate Marxism, and this is coming out of Silicon Valley. And look, who's Silicon Valley's candidate? Well, obviously, it's Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is Silicon Valley's candidate, and Kamala Harris is the Atlanticist's candidate. I mean, we both know that the woman has absolutely zero control over what she says, thinks, knows, does. Mm-hmm. We actually, I read yesterday in the new, even in a newspaper here in Germany, they asked the question, was she using an earpiece in the debate?
Well, she was. She was. I mean, the lighting, I mean, it was 3-1. I mean, the debate was horrific, but there was a very good, I forget what, it was on Zero Hedge, an article that came out and said, look, all this excitement about Kamala will pass quickly because everybody is noticing what happened. It was 3-1. I mean, they went after Trump. She didn't say any kind of policy positions. She just attacked Trump and lied about it. So all of that, I think, you know, a lot of people were upset or despondent after the debate. I don't see it that way. I think it will resonate with people in a good way. And I, you know, and we'll see what happens. But there's no way she can win the election legally. No way. Well, now we're just down to how bad they cheat.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to sum up, here in Germany, there's going to be one more state election in the state of Brandenburg. This is sort of the former heartland of Prussia. And the AfD is also leading in the polls there. It'll be interesting to see how that shapes up. The coalition forming, the forming of the state governments is going to take months. So what will happen in Thuringia and Saxony might not be solved by Christmas. And these things can have a ripple effect on the national government in Germany. I mean, the national coalition can always crumble. I think they're going to hold on to power until the upcoming elections next fall of 2025. But essentially, you know, we're witnessing the demise of the centralist uniparty structure in even in Germany. But these are all open question marks, and we can't answer those right now. The other election, too, that's going to be interesting is in Austria. But we'll have Lukas to talk about that, because there, too, the FPÖ, the Nationalist Populist Freedom Party, has the opportunity to take control and win power in Austria. And Austria is always Germany's little brother. And what happens there can have effects on what happens in Germany. So we'll see. But we certainly can say that the status quo that we had before 2015, the, you know, the centralist parties being in control, that day and age is over. And new parties with a new vision, a more nationalistic, but also a nation first vision, they're rising up. And the, you know, perhaps the 2020s will be the lashing out of the uniparty, but I don't see how in the next decade they're going to continue to pull this game.
I agree. Fabian, thank you. Enjoyed it. And we'll do it again soon.
All right.
Take care.